You're listening to A Stranger Podcast, www.thestranger.com.
Hi, I'm Jen Graves, and you're listening to Invisible, the Stranger's weekly conversation with people in art. I'm at the Henry Art Gallery, and I'm with Sarah Kujewski, the curator of a new show called The Violet Hour. Hi.
Hello.
And the show has three artists in it, and two of them are here. Another one of them is in Croatia having a baby. His wife is having a baby. Yeah.
So,
so the
strange over there.
The Croatian baby daddy is David Malkovich.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I'm here with Jen Liu and Matthew Day Jackson. Hi.
Hi.
First, talk about, if you would, Sarah, the kind of impetus behind the show and why these three artists.
Sure. Well, my thinking behind the show was just an observation of how artists have been processing or dealing with all of the political, economic, environmental changes going on in the world today. And we don't need to go into all of that. It's in the news all the time. And I've been thinking about this exhibition for a couple of years. And I first met David Malkovich in Croatia and was struck by a series of works that he did that had a science fiction tone to them. People from 2400 something coming back to Croatia and observing the changes and the losses in heritage and meaning of their existence. And that work always stuck with me. I became familiar with Matt's work a couple of years ago at the TBA Festival in Portland. He had an installation as part of the visual art exhibition there, and his working with American history and in looking at lessons to be learned from our past and projecting into the future. And so I started to think of those two together and what an interesting play that would have, a European perspective and an American perspective on these kinds of changes. And then Jen's work just seemed to kind of fit into this niche of in a very broad way with her work dealing with myth and extremism. And so that's the basic outline that I approached the exhibition with.
Well, let's start with
thank you.
Let's start with Jen, your work, and kind of the two bands of characters in your work, the Brethren of the Stone.
Uh-huh.
And the Iron Men.
Uh-huh.
How long have you been working with them? Tell about them.
The Brethren of the Stone, I've been working with this. It's based on a fictional story that I wrote at the end of 2005. So it's a pretty long ongoing project, and I think I'm nearing the end, finally. I think I'm kind of getting to the end of what I have to say about them. But basically, the story is about like these runaway heretic monks from the late 14th century in England and in Northern England. I constructed this whole story about these monks that thought that the end of the world was coming due to technology and deforestation and sort of iron smelting that actually was pretty well underway during the late 14th century. So they thought that they had to run away into nature, live a pure life, and then maybe also attack neighboring villages that were sort of involved in all this much hated iron smelting, right?
Carry on. I just want to say though that the videos that you've made about these, there are two videos, and each one is named after one of the, you know, the Iron, mm-hmm. the Iron Man, or, and they are they are very serious, but then also very absurd. And they're, the monks are doing all sorts of things. They're running around and they're chanting Pink Floyd songs. And they're attacking an SUV and joggers, and they're crying.
And then a whole range of human experience, really.
But go ahead and talk about Iron Man.
Iron Man. Well, Iron Man is part of, in my mind, a trilogy. And the third part is yet to be done. But Comfortably Numb is the first in this video trilogy. And it just introduces the monks, basically. And you start to see that the fiction that I've written isn't this kind of sealed off sort of historical fiction, but it is something that's actually about the present day. And yeah, they do attack the car and the jogger, and you know, you see the slip into contemporary culture. And then the second one is Iron Man. And with that one, it's funny. Well, I can tell about it structurally, but I think where I was coming from it was just thinking a little bit about the coming of age story itself. And like Star Wars, do you know what I mean? And like what, you know, the kind of arc of the like classic trilogy and what that means and what is at stake in the second one, which usually is kind of dark, like has a very strange beginning and a very strange end, very unresolved, right?
So there's a brass band playing Iron Man.
And a brass band playing Iron Man.
The Iron Man appears in this crazy, like, rock and roll sequence with these, and he's sort of like, you know, he's sort of black leather and also like Sauron of the, you know. And also, like,
he's a
and he has a guitar. I mean, like,
he's an amazing looking man.
He is.
With a hog snout, I think that's what it's called. It's a hog snout helmet. And they did actually have that in the late medieval times. They would actually run around with their swords and these crazy helmets that are just like, why do you need so much metal and...
It was sort of like the trucker hat of the era.
More or less. Yeah,
it can never be enough metal. Matthew, your work is not video. Sculptural, video. Right, but not in the show. Mm-hmm. And so I first saw your work in the Whitney Biennial of 2006? 2007?
Yeah.
What was it? And you had made a chariot in that video, or in that exhibition, and can you talk about the chariot? And Betsy Brock of the Henry said to me this morning that you had said something like, this car piece that you've made cancels out the chariot.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's like, you know, life is sort of syncopated by a bunch of mini suicides, you know? I think it's like sort of essential to growth where, you know, if you don't kill part of yourself all the time, then you just continue, then it's sort of like, then it's just like you solidify like concrete, I think. And so... with every kind of sculpture that's like Sarah and I were talking earlier about like how these sculptures that are generally vehicles or that generally mirror sort of utilitarian objects from our like natural, from our social, political, natural environment, that I think that it's like this piece was sort of meant to sort of cancel the things that I didn't like about the last piece or see the sort of failures in that. And it's interesting that the failure of the piece previous was that like that there wasn't really any failure, that it, that like I hadn't allowed myself to sort of transcend my abilities in terms of object making, that it was like within the realms of within the realm of knowledge that I had come to at that point, and really with the sculpture like really going outside of my sort of skill set, I guess. It's interesting to talk like that. Like,
how did you make the car? It's called I Like America and America Likes Me.
Well, it's actually called Chariot 2.
It's not called I Like America and America.
But it is. I just changed it this morning.
What?
Yes, you heard it here first. Well, actually, second, because the.
Was the label's changing?
Because
and no one will ever know that it was called I Like America.
No, it's called Chariot, and then it's just in parentheses.
Okay.
It's like I Like America and America Likes Me. And the reason being is because, generally speaking, people aren't going to know like what I Like America and America Likes Me is directly in reference to. And so we'll change the context of the piece a little bit too much. You know, it's sort of like in the parentheses, it's like it could have said like after Boys, but it is in reference to that, specifically to that performance.
The performance by Boys.
Yeah. And his first trip to the United States. And that
We should just describe for those who don't know, he spent time in a gallery alone with a coyote.
Yep, on West Broadway. Mm-hmm. I can't remember the name of the gallery, but he was taken off of an airplane in a gurney so that his feet mm-hmm. never touched mm-hmm. American soil until he got to the gallery and wrapped himself in
oh,
gold.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Isn't that
great? And so, yeah. But then that's another reason.
He was
reason
taken
why,
by ambulance.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and so, and the other reason, so the other reason is if you look inside of the car, there's like a reproduction of an Apollo space helmet wrapped in wolf felt to like kind of let people know a little bit that the car is like a hybrid of Joseph Beuys and then like a composite material of mm-hmm. epoxy resin. And then that also becomes like a sort of talk conversation about the continuation of material like within sculpture history, kind of like that. Now we're in a time of composites, right? And so, you know, so it's kind of like Richard Serra's verb list, but like rather than like, you know, to like take the verb list and then instead of just letting it reside and how a material is handled, but to talk about that and how like how it talks about meaning of an object rather than just changing the material. So there's. So yeah, this piece is like, but I'm always killing myself, you know, like killing an idea of myself, because the idea of being creative is to never find any sort of comfort or like punch in a time clock as far as like to, you know what I mean? Like finding a strategy for myself in which to communicate. It's like constantly like that's a living, breathing thing. Just like languages. I mean, like language is always changing and it's, so I mean, for me, yeah, and so there'll be a sculpture in like a year or something that I feel like kind of cancels out the ones before. Mm-hmm. They're important to me, and they're important as sculptures to me. You know, I'm not like saying that it sucks. I'm just saying that like I'm growing, and that the way that I'm communicating is becoming better. Mm-hmm. I guess.
Is it important to you how they're made?
Yeah, totally and entirely important.
Really?
Yeah.
Wait, talk about that, will you?
Like the way that something is made has to, I mean, it's like all encompassing.
You make them yourself.
The body was made by me. The car frame was built. The car frame I made the body to fit on a crashed frame that was built by my cousin. Skip Nichols of Nichols Industries in Tumwater, Washington.
You're originally from Olympia.
Yeah, he built, I was born in Panorama City, California, but I was raised in Olympia, Washington. And that there's, the car was built, raced, and crashed by my cousin. And that, like, it came from his side yard and, like, there were, like, trees, you know, like, it was, like, starting to be taken over, basically. And when I saw it, I was, like, knew exactly what it needed to be, but the body was made by me, hand-carved, kind of learning as I go, with giant sheets of abrasive that I bought from Boeing Surplus, and like kind of, and a chainsaw, oddly enough.
And it's resin? Is it mixed with wool or felt?
No,
or
it's
any?
Wool felt.
It is
it's,
wool.
It's this. I've used this felt. It's the same kind of felt that he was wrapped in, and I like American Airlines.
And ripped or dipped in resin.
No, it was laid up just like fiberglass.
Oh, okay.
And then the stained glass was made by Bill Hillman of Mansion Glass. And I wanted a stained glass window because I wanted something that, rather than projecting, like a lens for projecting light, that rather of like, sort of like, I wanted to think of the windshield like sunglasses, you know, like how you absorb light.
The windshield is a, for those who haven't seen it, is a sort of a web of rainbow-colored stained glass. I mean, each panel is its own color. It's not like they're all rainbowy, but they add up to a kind of spectrum.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, and the reason why it's stained glass is because you cannot remove stained glass from its sort of environment, which is like an environment of faith or, you know, it's like a church environment. Mm-hmm. And how that material became a communicative medium, sort of more like teaching lessons or teaching morals, and then also that it also talks about the divine and how it turns, sort of separates light into the like visible spectrum, you know? And it's, and that's, you know, so it you know, there's that's a point where there's a lot of meaning that the viewer can hopefully participate in.
In the show, you've also got another piece where it's a. There's kind of a sculptural object associated with a painting, or a sort of a sculptural painting where the table that the Henry had used for the sauna exhibition, you turned into a painting, actually, which was which sort of is black and looks charred.
It is
and
charred.
It is charred, and it's carved into. You did that with a blowtorch?
Yeah, like a weed burner.
Okay. And it's carved into a sort of constellation pattern, and at the each of the stars is represented by a different international coin or some
penny,
kind of coin.
But it's a, it's
a penny. Okay.
It's a penny from the smallest individual sum that's not fractured, because the smallest the smallest coins are sometimes quarter pence or half pence.
Mm-hmm.
And originally I wanted it to be all of the world's pennies, but it didn't work. So,
meaning,
in the sense that, like, because I wanted it to be the lowest denomination, but quarter pence, because I wanted it somehow to be like maybe suggestive of an individual, right?
Mm-hmm.
Within like the cumulative, you know, like
web of money, whatever.
Yeah.
But also at the same time, like making it's a star chart, it's like a navigation chart, and so. Like thinking about navigating the world by looking at the ground and your feet for change, and so it's, I mean, it's about like, you know, it's a self-portrait. I mean, it's like the terrestrial, like sort of these concerns that keep us stuck in our, like, just stuck.
Mm-hmm.
And it for a lot of time, my thinking, I was stuck with a lot of like really. I don't know, things that maybe I'd been trained to think, you know. And so, but now understanding a way to transcend that, hopefully, sometimes. But
well, it looks like a takeoff, also, because there's a hand on a right in front of the very large painting, there's a hand on a on a tree, a burned tree,
but it
and
has
a fist with
the
brass knuckles on it.
Yeah, if you look at the other piece, which is called Missing Link, it's like a sort of skeletal, it's an x-ray of a skeleton of a sculpture that I'd actually made and x-rayed by an equine veterinarian. That it's like, if you look at the leg of the skeleton, the walking stick has a medical replacement joint, so it looks like it could be like a sort of handle on a walking stick, but it's actually just like the lower part of a knee joint that is used for medical joint replacement. And so it's like maybe it's a walking stick, but also like maybe like it's burned, so maybe like the bone of like some other being that was fractured, burned.
Betsy was saying it also looks like a gear shifter, you know?
Maybe. I mean, that's okay. You know, there's... it's like,
that's
I'll
take it. That was
my
first impression.
Like for me, it's like... that wasn't something that I considered, but it's okay. I mean, it's like, really, when you make something, you can't control it. And if you try to control what people think, then it sucks.
Yeah, when you first positioned it in front of it, and I turned, you know, I was coming through the gallery, turned the corner, and... with the car there, and that it looked like
it's
it was
like
just
when you hit warp speed,
and then the ludicrous speed,
you see these constellations.
Ludicrous speed.
Sarah, can you talk about David Malkovich's work?
Sure. The two videos we have in the exhibition are from a series called These Days, which he filmed at the Italian Pavilion at the Zagreb Fair, which is an international expo center in Croatia. Also used in the 60s as a place for international economic contact with the socialist government. But it's notable because of this very strange futuristic architecture that, the characters in the film are, it's set in the near future. They sit in cars or loiter about by cars that are immobile, that are grounded. And they're very much in limbo. And the first video, These Days, young people sit and recite lines from a Learn How to Speak English record that was popular in the 60s and 70s, and saying just really absurd things. I don't feel well. Lots of people are sick in this very strange tone. And the pace is very slow, and you kind of get absorbed in this sort of malaise. And each of the videos is framed by this kind of temporary structure, which he uses as a way to sort of recreate the videos in each venue. But they also have an echo with the architecture that is portrayed in the videos, this sort of stone, massive, steel and glass, and the structures are made of drywall, very temporary. And what he remarked to me is that the key thing there is to think of it as temporary, and that much of our situations today are temporary. So to me, they act as this kind of portal to transport us into this video space, but also as a kind of a temporary shelter in a way as well.
Jen, you've got a link to, I mean, this architectural question, because you've got a large, a very large photo collage.
Mm-hmm.
And can you talk about that? What, where did you kind of make that? There's all these sort of brutalist forms, and in the center is what looks like a recycle sign.
It is.
Okay, yeah. With candles that have been burned down, and so, you know, made out of like hundreds of candles. And where did you shoot those images?
I didn't actually. They're images from the internet.
Are they?
Yeah. Because they're all cathedrals, brutalist cathedrals from South America, and also a few from Northern England. And so still very much connected to the story of the Brethren, right?
Yeah. And but, you can tell, actually, I shouldn't have asked where you shot them, because they're black and white. They look archival.
Yeah.
You can totally,
Yeah. And you can see, like, the blur and the pixels and everything, and the bad photoshopping and stuff. But
I love the architectural, there must be scale models or something, because there's these sort of vague, you know, human forms in there too.
No, those are actual humongous sculptures.
Are they?
Statues.
Yeah, no, that's from the cathedral in Brasilia, and they're actually these humongous. Yeah, but yes, and the scale of this, they look like these tiny little.
Why do you guys think the web keeps appearing? Like the constellation web, the web on the. On the,
do you mean like connectedness?
No, no, no. Literally, like a multifaceted kind of almost, geodesic dome sort of polyhedron.
Yeah.
And there, you've got it on the windshield. You've got it behind your skeleton.
Yeah, it's in all of the work.
It's in everything. You've got it in a very large diptych painting. Why? Well, I am seeing this everywhere.
Just as a visual kind of.
Oh, yeah, as a visual trope. I mean,
there's,
you know, we just had an exhibition in Seattle by Oscar.
Yeah, two of them. That was a
great Eli Hansen. Yeah. And they are really interested in the polyhedrals and crystals. And so, what? Where is it coming from for you guys?
That would be that's a great question. I would love to hear what you say.
Okay, now you're kicking it to me.
I'll tell you what I think, but not until you say it.
Well, I have my own, I mean, I don't know, maybe it's different for every person, but I think there's actually a really, really intense generational thing, and it has a lot to do with reassessing, I don't know, I hate to say utopia, but at least like 60s thinking and visionary sort of structures, and that really being a big part of what our work is in response to.
What years were the two of you born?
76.
And
so important.
Okay.
Right.
I was born 75.
18.
So we're all in the same boat.
Yeah.
So I think that, and there was this moment, I think, I mean, it's a topic, a cultural event, a history that I think we've all been dealing with for a while. You know, it's been a few, like several or many, many years, actually. And I don't know.
Well, it's kind of like the shape. It's like the shape of the grid after,
it's the new grid.
Yeah. It's like the shapes that are created by things that are in close proximity of one another, but it's also like, for me, it's sort of like graphically expressing like sort of total faith in that everything is interconnected and that there's nothing sort of separate, and everything is sort of attracted to its closest neighbor, but at the same time in a giant webwork of being but it's also maybe like a sort of map of like how my brain works and totally how yours. When I hear you talk, it's like you could talk about like runaway monks and like Black Sabbath simultaneously, and then
near chaos sort of connection making.
But it's also like that is the grid. That's the image of like also like sort of information technology, but it's also, like, I think of it more like that we're, it's like a shape of ideas and how our brains naturally work. And I think that for me, it's like the, it's like, I guess kind of like a protest against the mythology of linearity, that idea that we, our brains work linearly, like we walk down the street chewing gum, thinking about sex, and like balancing our checkbook in our head all simultaneously while considering, like, you know, something that I really want to, like, make out of tinfoil, you know, and it's like, all those things in a circuitous way are connected, so that's why.
But it's almost like, I can see what you're saying, but I almost see it as, like, the ideal sort of model of our, what our brains are like, and I mean, you also, I mean, okay, our brains actually probably work some very, very similarly, and it's pretty chaos. The Google era brain is like this chaotic sort of like bush of just like shit going everywhere, you know? And I think that the idea of even making straight lines between these dots in time, like, is actually a fantasy. It's a desired object or a desired state, right? In the same
but
way,
I think
that
it depends on how,
like,
closely you're looking at it. I mean, it's like the closer and closer that you look, I mean, it's kind of like,
whether you're in a satellite view or whether you're in
I mean, I mean, you know, it's like, I agree.
We could talk about this for 5 hours.
Yeah.
But thank you guys so much. I know you have to go and preview your show for a bunch of people. So thanks very, very much for coming.
Thank you.
It's really fun.
Of course.
Thanks.
You've been listening to Invisible. I'm Jen Graves.